WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Biden gives Ukraine permission to use U.S.-supplied weapons to strike inside Russian territory. CBS's Charlie Daggett reports.
The Russians, they're furious about this. They see it as an escalation. But to the White House and others, the escalation started when North Koreans joined this fight.
CBS's Caitlin Huey Byrne says President-elect Donald Trump vows on day one to declare a national emergency and use the U.S. military to carry out a mass deportation.
Trump's team is considering executive orders during the first days of his presidency designed to withstand legal challenges to his deportation plans.
Health officials are investigating an outbreak of E. coli linked to organic carrots. At least 15 people have been hospitalized and one person has died. CBS's Meg Oliver.
The organic carrots were sold at major retailers like Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and Target. The cases are spread across 18 states, with the highest number in Washington, Minnesota, and New York.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Badgers fire a coach. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After just 2 years, the Badgers fired offensive coordinator Phil Longo. Wisconsin losing at home to Oregon Saturday, 16-3. Head coach Luke Fickell.
There's a lot of things that you can kind of point a finger at. Obviously, it's easiest to talk about the quarterback position, but I just think as a whole, there's just so many of those things that we just got to get better at in order to put ourselves in a position where it's not all on the shoulders of a quarterback.
NFL, the Packers with a dramatic 20-19 win over the Bears after Green Bay defensive lineman Carl Brooks blocked Chicago's attempt to kick the winning field goal.
I'm visualizing myself block the kick. To be honest, I ain't seen nothing. They ran the same formation, and I just got penetration and just wanted it more, got a hand up.
The NBA has fined the Bucks' Doc Rivers $25,000 after complaining about a controversial call by the refs in their loss to Charlotte.
I thought the final play was the ref blowing a call. This is back-to-back games now.
That's the Bucks' Doc Rivers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same?
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. We're starting to see the Trump cabinet take form, and they're saying record pace. He's bringing out his picks in record pace to fill the cabinet. And you go, hello, were you not paying attention to the campaign? That whole Project 2025 thing, that whole, the entire think tank cesspool working towards getting theirs? Did you miss any of that? Well, the CEOs are taking form, and our government will be of for and by CEOs. And the thing for me that I keep going, at some point we're going to have to ask ourselves, which side are we on? Especially my red hat friends who are going, I like Mr. Trump because he's good at business. And we're going to have business people running government. And I think firsthand we're going to realize just how bad of an idea that is. In fact, we've seen every time someone who's good at business takes over government, just how bad they run things. Because understand, it's going to be painful. There are going to be cuts. You got someone like Elon Musk saying that they're going to cut 30% of government spending, or $2 trillion. Anyone who took 100 level economics knows you pull that kind of money out of the economy, you're talking depression. You're talking immediate collapse, which I got to tell you, part of me thinks the CEO class wants so we can get people back into place. get them desperate, get them pliable again, get them showing up to work for good poverty wages. Part of me buys that. So when you hear Musk say, we're gonna cut, and you hear Trump praising him as one of the great cutters, and the Department of Government Efficiency with two people heading it up, talking about slashing and burning. What they're really talking about is privatizing. It's not about making government more efficient. It's about privatizing and profitizing the functions of government, the things that you and I need. I guarantee you by the end of Trump's term, Medicare will be completely privatized. And it happened without many people even thinking about it happening. But right out from under us, Medicare Advantage. Thank you, George W. Bush. And pushed heavily during the Trump years. I think we'll finish it off during this Trump year. And then what happens? Well, then the privateers do what they do. They profitize. And that benefit that you got that made you go, I'm going to take the private, the Advantage plan over traditional Medicare because it gives me sneakers. Then that stuff starts going away. And those they start creeping in with more higher deductibles and more co-pays. And you end up on Medicare no better than most working people. And the question then becomes, when do we wake up? I've asked the question for years. When it comes between your children and a CEO's children, which kid eats when times get bad? Which kid works dangerous jobs when times get bad? Which kid gets an education? Which kid gets health care? Which kid gets a childhood? The CEO's or yours? We're already in an environment where I argue two incomes don't support a family anymore. We're pushing towards that third, that child having to go back. And when we privatize and profitize the functions of government, it's only going to get worse. And, you know, when you got someone like Musk saying that they want to, the government only needs 99 agencies, not 400. They're going to slash and burn. What they're saying is they're going to leave an awful lot of what we as citizens have expected from our government. We're going to leave that in the hands of people like Elon Musk, who will decide what it is we need. And when times get tough, what do? They slash to the bone, into the bone, where it's painful, not for them, but for you and me. And it comes back to that age-old question, which side are you on? Which side do you find yourself? On the knife side, holding the handle, or getting the blade? The vast majority of us are at the tip of the blade. And someone like Musk will have no problem slashing and burning. And the reality is, over the next 4 years, the goal of what we do here is to point out when that happens. Because everybody is going to know someone affected by this if they do what they're saying they're going to do. And I have all the faith in the world that they will. If they do what they say they're going to do, everybody's going to know somebody who's going to be harmed by these policies. And this is an opportunity for Democrats or whoever to step forward and go, we've got a policy to move us forward. We've got an agenda. We've got a campaign. We've got an opportunity to make things right. Because it's going to hurt the red hats too. They just don't know it. I've talked to some of my friends who think it's just the others. And you could define the others as, you know, whichever group that they don't like at that moment. Single mothers, you know, immigrants, small businesses, low-wage workers, you know, the others. Again, which side are you on? Because we know tax cuts for the rich are coming. We know massive handouts for corporations are coming. We know slash and burn deregulation is coming. We know everything that the CEO class wants. Every wet dream list that the board of directors of big corporations want is going to be pursued. And it's going to be pursued by someone like Elon Musk and the slash and burn crowd. And the question is how does that help you? How does it help working people? Is there a trickle down? Will those quote unquote savings get into your pocket? And the answer is no. Of course not. Under no circumstances. But at least the others won't get it, right? And that's what they've done masterfully. You have to give them credit. Elon Musk used Twitter in a way that you know, pumped right-wing propaganda into everyone's eyeballs. The right-wing blogosphere did their job. Fox News did their job. Cable News did their job. The right-wing dominance in talk radio did their job. And we're all now going to suffer, red hats, blue hats, green hats, pink hats alike. Because the working class is going to be the one that takes it on the chin again. Especially the low-wage workers. Because again, the idea of we're going to run government like business only hurts working people. Because when the company gets slow, what do? They fire workers. They don't cut their CEO pay. The CEO's kid doesn't eat peanut butter and jelly instead of steak. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So 30%, $2 trillion is what Elon Musk said at a rally not too long ago that he wanted to cut in federal spending when he's the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, which again, the big joke on the internet is you need two rich guys to be efficient. To head up the government Department of Government Efficiency, two rich guys with no actual real power to be CEOs. This is gonna be interesting to see how this plays out. But the question: what if Musk got everything he wanted? What if he was able to do to the United States what he did, let's say, to Twitter? What if he were able to cut 30% or 40% in spending? What if you were able to slash and burn and take food stamps away from children and take granny's LIHEAP money so she freezes in the winter? What would that look like? Here to share some thoughts on that very question, I've asked my good friend Mateus Vernango to come share some thoughts. Economics professor at Bucknell University, one of the smartest guys I know on this topic. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Rick.
What happens? You're an economics professor. I mean, walk me through the textbook first. What happens if you have government spending that is really just draconian in a draconian way, slashed 30, 35, 40%? What happens?
Oh, you know, I'll just give you an example of what's happening right now in Argentina, you know, with cuts that are more or less of the same proportion. So far into our third, trimester, GDP, so this guy has, you know, 10 months in government, GDP has already fallen, and it's smaller, the adjustment of, you know, than a third of the spend, but yeah, at any rate, the fall in GDP is already of more than 6% of GDP, and it's going to be higher than that. So a significant recession, and if he actually got anything close to that, the impact, you know, over the years would be a brutal collapse of the economy. Mind you, some of these things are unsustainable. So I don't think it could have. We're talking on the realm of just imagination, but this is clearly would be catastrophic collapse of the economy. not only Trump would lose the midterm elections, he and whoever is the candidate, in 20, I mean, supposedly he cannot be the candidate, but God knows with this guy, they'll be, destroyed in the next election. So the Democrats can run the most neoliberal, sort of type, and they'll still win the election because it will tank the economy in ways that we have not seen since the Great Depression. So that's the sort of, and it will have a global impact. That's the other thing that people don't understand. The American economy is, 20%, north of 20% of the global market. So it will tank the global economy. So when the Great Depression was an American recession that caused a global crisis. So if Elon Musk does something of this proportion, he'll throw the global economy into a brutal recession.
So what do you say to the person who goes, well, we need to start cutting, we've gotten too fat and lazy, we're wasting money because evidently there's a golden-doored office of waste, fraud, and abuse that we've been told exists. We just got to go in there with a knife, and we got to slash and burn that wasteful spending.
Now, look, there are many ways in which you can improve the way we spend money. So we spend poorly money, sure, no doubt. I mean, we're sending bombs to Ukraine, and now we're allowing them to bomb further into Russia. We're sending bombs to Israel. And we have walk down any street of any American city, and you have homeless people. This is not a new thing. Going back to the 1960s and the discussions about butter and guns. So that we can spend money in ways that would have been much better for the American public and globally, we have ways of making the government more efficient. No doubt about that. Contracts to billionaires, to put, stuff on the moon or whatever, on Mars, colonize Mars, should be looked seriously, to see how much waste there is into those things. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the government can do no wrong and any spending is good spending. But the idea that you can slash all of this spending and that there is a lot of fat, in particular in the sorts of things that they think that there is fat in education, in transfers to poor people and so on and so forth, is, for lack of a better term, sheer idiocy. I mean, there's nothing, short of complete stupidity, which, with all due respect, I mean, it's not an argument to say it's stupidity, but, but it's what it is. These will, if they do something even, close to getting in that direction, it will sort of show too many people that keep repeating the government does not create jobs, the government cannot create wealth, how much the government is central in creating wealth, in not just the, maintaining, as people tend to think, the sort of, those at the bottom of the, income distribution from falling, even further, down. It is to create the prosperity of those at the top. It's fundamental for that. And part of that, again, there is waste there, but that's not what they're going to look for. And so, I'm skeptical on two things. I think that they're going to cut some spending on things like SNAP and education and so on and so forth. But not to the proportion that would lead to a complete collapse of the economy. As much as I think they're going to deport a lot of people, but not to the point in which they'll create such, shortages in the construction industry, in the agricultural industry, that they'll throw the economy into a complete disrepair. If, they're stupid enough, but if they do those things, they'll pay a price. They'll show up that in spite of the populist discourse on certain things, and particularly more advanced than, I would say, than Trump, that they're not really pro-workers, that they're not for the, people at the bottom, that they just fool them in, to some extent, and that the economy will not be better under Trump, as it wasn't. That's the funny thing. It wasn't, better under Trump. Fair enough. I'm also, I should say this, and going a little bit off your topic, is I don't think we can blame people that feel that the economy didn't improve for them for that. So the truth is that for 40 years, the economy, we have had wages that have stagnated, and there are people at the bottom that have reasonable, you know, reasons for being angry. So I don't think that people that are angry because they're not doing better are idiots that don't know how to vote. I think that they know what's going on with them. So I think we have to respect that, and we have to make an effort to make their lives better. And yeah. I think this would be the exact opposite of that. This would be a disgrace. This would throw, you know, it is already true when you drive around this country that there are many things here that look like a third world country. And this would just further those problems. It won't solve any of those.
No, I agree. But, you know, I was looking at, you know, numbers from the Congressional Budget Office, and they point out that, you know, discretionary spending makes up about 26% of our spending. So if you're going to take, you think you're going to cut 30%, that's every bit of discretionary spending and then some. So that means, granny, we're coming after Social Security. That means they're going to further privatize Medicare. That means a lot of stuff that's going to touch the people in a big way, the people that voted for them.
Definitely. I mean, again, to give you the example, Milei in Argentina has cut the pensions of the elderly. And so the elderly are in the streets, and he had to send the police to beat up the elderly. You can see videos of this on TV. He slashed all of the funds for public universities over there. They tend to be federal, so funds for the universities are not they are state universities, but there are a lot of federal universities. And you have all of the professors in the streets. He has cut, for example, spending. He didn't pay the electricity bills. So, you know, the company that distributes electricity didn't give them, you know, has no money to pay the producers. All of those things. And he keeps saying, I balance the accounts. So in the case of the U.S., if he's going to balance the account, we're talking 7% of GDP. So that's not a small thing to do. The point of this is, I keep saying, the Milei stuff in Argentina is that it's a gimmick. It's an accounting gimmick. Why? Because at some point, you know, you have to pay the electricity company. Otherwise, they'll stop producing it. Right. So they're going to, you know, so you didn't pay so far, but you're going to pay and negotiate and pay something later on. So this is just to show, in the case of Argentina, the IMF, look, I'm being tough. Meanwhile, you know, this is holding, you know, everything more or less, you know, can be held because, you know, the company is still producing, but at some point they won't. So the elderly, at some point, everybody knows an old person, and, you know, and so you'll have everybody in the street. And so it's not sustainable. So it's a fake, you know, cut in spending because you cannot do it. He stopped transferring money to the states. You know, the states that voted red states are the ones that receive most transfers from the federal government. You know, so the largest transfers don't come to, you know, don't go to New York or Pennsylvania. The largest transfers of money go to Mississippi and Alabama, and deep red states, they're going to be in deep trouble if, you know, the government stops sending money. They stop sending money for things like, you know, Medicare, Medicaid. And so I think they want to go for some of these things, Musk has said that there'll be pain, not for him. He wants pain for the others. You know, it's the sort of, we're going to be puritanical and, you know, and suffer and, you know, expiate all our sins, but on the backs of, you know, working class people in other places. But that will come back to bite them, you know, in the rear ends very fast, because politically, I think it's suicidal. So if Trump is so naive as to allow that kind of stuff happen, then he's in deep trouble. There is also the possibility that this is like the, you know, the wall that the Mexicans will pay for, that we're still waiting for. You know, that this is just rhetorical, you know, crap.
It's just bread and circus.
It's absolutely nothing. And, you know, and I actually, in some ways, you know, I don't want to see this humongous crisis. I also don't want to see Trump and this kind of GOP reelected all the time. But I would say it's not just that, you know, if they do this, they lose. I think at some point, the other side, the Democrats, have to commit that, you know, there is one party that clearly here, you know, they're going to give big tax cuts also for the very wealthy. So Musk is going to get tax cuts. He's going to go and cut, you know, social, that they're going to do. They're going to cut some on social programs. So there must be on the other side a party that says, no, we're going to, you know, we're here for the working class. We're here for the little guy. If not, you know, I think, you know, we'll keep going from, you know, a pendulum in which every time when they come back, whoever comes back, it's probably not Trump next time around, I would imagine. But it's also an awful sort of, you know, conservative in the Trump mold, that they'll do so much damage that it's harder and harder for any reasonable person, whoever it comes, to reconstruct and rebuild, you know, the economy.
Yeah, well, we keep going through this, though, Mateus. We went from the Reagan years, the Reagan recession years. HW tried to bring us out of it. Clinton got us out of the Reagan years. And then W. Bush comes in, collapses the economy. Obama builds it back up. Trump comes in, crashes the economy. Biden builds it back up. Here we're right back in the same boat. Trump's going to come in. Everything that they're talking about is leading us to the position where you're going to give corporate America everything they want, the big banks, the big insurance companies, everybody. They're going to collapse. They're going to overreach again. It's going to collapse again. And we're going to keep going through this over and over until we wake up to the reality that's got to stop.
To some extent, I would disagree with you on one thing. I think that the Clinton economy was a bubble, and he was too much on the other side, if you ask me.
He wasn't great. And I don't disagree with you on this, but he did raise taxes on the wealthy. He did do some things that moved us in a better direction.
Yeah, but he was the guy that said the era of big government is gone. So I think I'll give you this. Obama, with all of the things that one may criticize, he's the first, you know, president since Nixon, when he got the EPA, that extended the welfare state in the sense that he created Obamacare.
Agreed.
And Biden moved even further in the sense that, you know, Obama was never pro-labor in the sense, you know, he was still and still is probably a free trader. Biden moved away from some of these things. So I think that, you know, people don't give enough credit to Bidenomics in the sense that he moved away from some of these things. So I think that that's the tragedy of what just happened, is that we started moving away from those things. And we got slammed by this defeat, which wasn't a run-of-the-mill defeat. You know, although it's just 51%, he got the popular vote. He got the seven states, swing states. So I think that this is going to be painful. I think that the Democrats have to rethink what we're doing. If we're going to stop this pendulum, if we can sort of move in the other direction. So think of the New Deal era as one in which, Republicans, when they came back, they were the Eisenhower type. They didn't push back. They didn't want to destroy the welfare system. They didn't want to go after Social Security. They accepted some of the norms of what was reasonable and decent. So I think that that's what we sort of need, to create a consensus on that level. To say the obvious, I think, about that problem. So there are many things I hear every other time, you know, that the American public is conservative, that this proves that they're conservative. Once you look at what people do like, what they voted in this election, so they voted in Missouri for higher minimum wage, for extending pay sick leave. The American public is very progressive. It's pro-labor in economic issues, at least. It's very clearly so. And so it is a mistake not to run on those issues, because those issues won by more, you know, than Trump in the red states. So people that voted for Trump voted for higher minimum wages. Trump will never campaign, never did. He's against higher minimum wages. And so... so that, I think, it's a winning argument for Democrats. I cannot understand how we're not running on those things. I cannot understand, you know, why we allow the pendulum to swing on those issues. And part of the story is the amount of money that is in the system.
Yep.
And that hurts Democrats, actually. So although we raised, you know, Democrats raised, Kamala had more money than Trump, formally speaking. I mean, you know, there are many things that do not show up. For example, there is no Twitter money in the official sort of records. But Twitter was a propaganda machine for Trump. Not that I think that's what caused the election results, but clearly there's more money than it even shows up in the records.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I'm hoping Democrats get the message, because I've been saying for the longest time, you got to run on the economy. You got to run on reunionizing the country. You got to run on taking on the CEO class. And here we are in this administration is going to be of for and by the CEOs, because that's who Trump keeps appointing. So I come back to where I started, you know, this hour with, you know, we're going to find out which side we're on. Whose kids are going to eat, whose kids are going to work dangerous jobs, whose kids are going to get an education, whose kids are going to have an opportunity. That will be the definer. But Mateus, as always, I appreciate the thoughts, the comments. Good stuff. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for having me, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think Doge, do you think Elon and Vivek are going to come up with 30% reduction in spending? And what do you think will happen? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this.
.5 The Tap.
Weather is sponsored by Peck Roofing Inc., veteran and locally owned and operated. Learn more online at peckroofinginc.com.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with rain tonight and breezy. Temps rise slowly through the 50s. Morning highs in the mid-50s tomorrow as rain wraps up. Temps fall into the 40s in the afternoon and windy. Cloudy and blustery Thursday with flurries and snow showers. Temps only rise to 40. It's 46 right now.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
If you haven't tried mindfulness techniques before, the idea is to take a minute, focus on the present, not the past, not the future. Be here now. You can do it in your car.
Please tell me while you're driving.
I would say preferably not driving. Just take a moment and close your eyes and just breathe. Focus like on the breath coming into your body and out.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, 700 hospitality workers at Virgin Las Vegas Casino went on strike on Friday, November 15th, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions. First time in over 22 years. Our friends at the Culinary Workers Union have taken workers out on an open-ended strike, and I've got one of those striking workers here with us. Aaron Mahan is a food service worker. He's been at Virgin Hotel since 2005. Aaron, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So walk me through what's going on. Why are you on the picket line?
We're fighting for working families. We're fighting for a living wage, and we're fighting for the same contract every other hotel casino on the strip and off strip have gotten.
And walk me through what that looks like, because you know most people don't know what food service workers do in Las Vegas, what the wage structure is like. Walk me through what you're looking for.
Well, we're looking for the same contract that every other worker has gotten. Right now the hotel are paying the scabs $300 a day, which is less than what we're asking for.
Wait a second. So we've got money to pay scabs, but we don't have money to pay someone who's been a loyal employee since 2005.
Correct.
That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
That's the company's strong suit at this point, not making sense.
So why are we here then? I mean, you know, look, the reality is, from what I've seen, I look at this company, like a lot of the casinos in Las Vegas, doing very well. This one doing very well since the pandemic. You guys are the ones who do the work that bring in the revenue. It seems this could be a no-brainer, something that could avoid this, because I can't imagine that this is good PR, as a lot of conventions are coming to Vegas now. A lot of groups are coming to have their shindigs. You don't want to have to find another hotel at the last minute to not be labeled a scab, right?
Correct. And Formula One starts in a matter of days, and we're the closest hotel to Formula One. So I don't understand why the casino isn't coming up with the money.
So let me ask you, you know, if someone's coming to see the Formula One race, you know, what's the request to them then?
The request is don't come to Virgin. There are any number of other hotels. This is the only one on strike. Go to any other hotel.
And as I said, it's the first time in over 22 years your union has gone out on an open-ended strike like this, which is kind of a big deal. And I think it shows, at least me, as an outsider, that you guys are kind of far apart then, right?
Yeah, their last offer was roughly one-third of what everyone else got.
A third?
Give or take a few cents. A third. Roughly. Give or take a few cents here and there.
So, you know, basically they want you to be the guys who are leading the race to the bottom, it seems.
They've already won that, I believe.
So let me ask you that, because, you know, I look at and I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm going, it sounds like they wanted this strike. It sounds like they've put themselves in a position that you would go out on strike in hopes of whatever comes with the next administration. Do you get a sense of that this has more to do with politics and being opportunistic in the moment? Or is this just pure, we're a greedy corporation and we don't want to pay?
They just don't want to pay. I mean, that's what the bottom line is. They're saying they don't have the money. And I mean, their other companies have plenty of money. We know there's money out there. They're spending money.
Now, you've got you and 699 other hospitality workers, the people who make this company go, out on the picket line right now. How long are we staying out there?
We're staying positive. So, we're going to be out here until we get it done. We know what we need to do. We need to stay positive. We need to do what it takes to get what we deserve, to get what everyone else got, and get these scabs off of our property.
Yeah, I'm amazed that you've got enough people to cross a picket line there in Las Vegas. That because as I know, Vegas is a union town. To have that many scabs,
it is very much so.
So any of your members cross?
A few. Not that many. It's a shame.
That's unfortunate. So how can I help? How can folks help? What's the pressure point? Is it just if you're coming to Vegas, don't stay there? Is there a PR point to this? What are you guys working on?
Well, just don't stay here if you're coming to Vegas. You know, if you are coming to Vegas and you have an extra hour to spend, come join us on the line.
All right, then. That'll be the message then. Aaron, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts. I wish you guys the best. Anything I can do to help, I'm always here for you. And if you're going to Las Vegas, stay away from Virgin Hotel, the Virgin Hotel and Casino there. Aaron Mahan, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1929. That was the day that Vilio Rosval and Jani Voutilainen disappeared on their way to recruit workers at a bush camp during a strike in northwestern Ontario, Canada, near Thunder Bay. They were both Finnish Canadians. Vilio Rosval was an organizer for the Lumber Workers Industrial Union of Canada. The union included many Finnish lumber workers and had ties to the Canadian Communist Party. Jani Voutilainen was an experienced trapper. The two men never made it to their destination, the Pigeon Timber Company camp located north of Onion Lake. It was unknown what had happened to them until the next April. Voutilainen's body was found in shallow water at the edge of Onion Lake. A few days later, Rosval was found, also drowned, in a nearby creek that emptied into the lake. The Finnish workers blamed the deaths of the two men on the conservative Finnish camp boss, who oversaw the Onion Lake encampment. The coroner's autopsy ruled the deaths accidental drownings, but many remained unconvinced and suspected foul play. They questioned how an experienced trapper such as Voutilainen could fall through the ice and drown in such shallow water. Thousands attended the funeral for the martyrs. The debate over what happened to the two men continues to this day. An historical marker reads, quote, "The mystery surrounding the deaths of Rosval and Voutilainen endures, sustaining them in public memory as martyrs to the cause of organized labor." A headstone donated by the Thunder Bay and District Labor Council was erected in 1993 to honor the graves which had gone previously unmarked. The deaths of the two men traveling to organize workers remains a mystery of the Canadian labor movement to this day. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So now look, this is one of those moments where, you know, you look at the, you know, Aaron and the other hospitality workers at Virgin Hotel there in Las Vegas, and you go, these are people who are just fighting for a decent wage. And this is what corporate America does all the time. They bring in scabs. They pay them a lot of money. $300 a day for people doing this job doesn't seem like an enormous amount until you realize that these workers don't make anywhere close to that. So the fact that this corporation has that kind of wealth to spend on breaking a strike tells you where their priorities are. And it's like we've talked about numerous times on the show over the years. You see these big corporations where they'll spend unlimited sums for the sole purpose of breaking the union. You know, we talked about, you know, last year, the hospital up in Buffalo spent like $10 million on scab nurses, where it would only cost like $5 to give the nurses that built your hospital what they needed and wanted. But it's about power and control. It's not about, can we afford it? That's now never the dynamic. It's whether we want to. Whereas in the past, you would sit down and open the books and say, look, our labor did this. We want part of what our labor creates. I say this all the time. I want corporate America to be profitable so that when we sit down at the bargaining table, we get a profit of a portion of the profits that our labor creates. That's how we built this country. That's how we built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity during my grandparents' era. What we've done over the last 30, 40, 50 years is we've given the CEO class so much power. And it's going to get worse. Understand, the Trump years now are going to put us in a position where the CEOs now are going to run our government. And they're going to deregulate to service their industries, because they know once they're done in government, they're going right back to being the CEO. We talked about the Department of Energy CEO, the guy who was the head of the fracking company, Liberty Energy from, I think it's Colorado. What do you think he's going to do as the head of that agency? Of course, he's going to create an environment so that companies like his will have more of an advantage. We'll see less concern about climate because he's a climate denier. We'll see less concern about the environment and what's left after they're done doing their drilling and fracking and all of that. You'll see more external costs being put on the backs of taxpayers at the benefit of corporate America. We know that's what's coming. I look at the article recently with Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. Now understand, J.P. Morgan Chase made $50 billion in profits last year. $50 billion in profit. Did I say that right? Did you hear it right? They made $50 billion in profit, and that is not enough. He thinks the regulatory regime has gotten out of hand. It's out of control. Angry that regulators are pushing around big banks. Angry that they regulate how they charge for you know, things that we end up getting screwed over. And you go back to, you remember when they collapsed the economy? Do you remember when we had to bail the banks out? When was that, 2008? I know it's a long time ago, but we seem to do this often, don't we? We deregulated the banks. We said, no, you go ahead. You gamble. Go ahead, you know, roll the dice there in Wall Street. Take those mortgages, which are generally safe, bundle them into a bunch of garbage and collapse the economy. You go do that. Turn boring banking into going to the casino. And they collapse the economy. And we came back with some half-hearted attempt. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which they think is just an abomination. Again, too much regulation. So what we're going to hear, again, the steady mantra of we need to deregulate. Remember why we regulate the banks. Because when we pull back those regulations, they abuse it. And now you've got, you know, Jamie Dimon, whose company, JP Morgan Chase, made $50 billion in profit, saying that's not enough. And he says it's time for corporate America to fight back against regulators. He says, you know, if you're in a knife fight, you better damn well bring a knife. It's time to fight back, he said. And look, their view is that all for them, none for you. So the question is, when they do deregulate the banking industry, how long before they collapse it again? How long to the next banking crisis? And then, since we're too big to fail, even still, we're back to that. How much do you and I have to fork out to bail them out under the guise of, if we don't bail them out, the entire economy is going to collapse? And this is why I come back to, I know a lot of people were angry this past election. I get it. I'm angry. But this was the wrong decision. Trump has always attacked workers. And I can't tell you how many times I've had people tell me, well, you know, I think we need, you know, inflation's really high. I think we need a business guy in there. And I'm going, well, one, Trump was a really crummy businessman. And two, did you see his business practices? It's all about, you know, stiffing workers out of wages, stiffing contractors out of their payments, filing bankruptcy to benefit himself, while all along leaving others to hold the bag. Well, when you're the U.S. government, there's no one to hold the bag except for, well, we the people. You know, we keep hearing about how bad the debt is, and we do have a debt problem. We do have to deal with it. And I argue we deal with that by raising taxes on very wealthy people. Maybe cutting back on some of the elaborate tax breaks. Here's a thought. But also, a good portion of that are government bonds that are sold to we the people. Shores up pension funds. Helps people like me save for my kids' college. There's a lot of us in that debt. Yeah, we got a lot of foreign, you know, countries like China owning a bunch of our debt. But a good portion of that $34 trillion is us. So to renege on that, which I think that the Elon Musks of the world and the Trumps of the world would not be against doing, what does that mean for we, the working people? And I come back to this over and over again. Which side are you on? When you look at the situation that we're in, it's very simple. Are you on the side of the benefactor, the people who are going to be able to profit off of the disaster that's coming? Or are you going to be the one left holding the bag? Are you going to be the one with the pension that has collapsed because it's based on, you know, what the stock price on Wall Street is? Are you the retiree who's saved a little bit of money in a nest egg that you've put in Wall Street and in a stock fund, hoping that it's going to pay you dividends to last you the rest of your life? Which side are you on? Are you the worker that could lose your job if they do pull $2 trillion out of the economy? Which side are you on? Are you on the side where your kid's going to have to go work in the dangerous jobs, as I said earlier, going to not get an education, going to not have an opportunity? Or are you going to be on the side of your kids get the best private education, never have to get their fingernails dirty doing actual work, and certainly are not going to go hungry? It's, for me, it's that simple. And we've got to get back to this kind of thinking. I've been saying for a long time, Democrats brought identity politics to the class war. It's time to roll up your sleeves and get back into the class war, because the Bezoses and the Musks
And those folks, they're winning. They have taken over our government. The only thing that could stop them, they now control. And that should scare every working person out of their minds. Because understand, Trump hasn't announced who will be the head of the Department of Labor. I do fully expect him to fire Jennifer Abruzzo at the National Labor Relations Board on day one, as Biden did to Peter Robb on day one of his term. I do expect that to happen, and I do expect him to replace her with someone the polar opposite of her. She has been fantastic for working people. She has done really good things. There have been really good decisions, policies, regulations that have come out of the NLRB to help workers organize, to give folks the opportunity, especially when you're talking about like Amazon and the joint employer rule that says, yeah, you've got these third-party logistic companies that you control, these gig workers that you control, but they're not really your employees. Well, you know what? They are, because you control them. That's going to go by the wayside. It happened when Trump took office the first time. It will happen again. Which side are you on? When Trump takes office and the NLRB that's doing what the National Labor Relations Act was meant to do, which is encourage collective bargaining, encourage people to join and form unions, to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions, you will then swing that pendulum to where that will be, that agency will be weaponized against workers. We'll see longer times to get elections. We'll see more harassment and intimidation. It's coming. And the sad reality is maybe, unfortunately, it's what we need. Maybe, unfortunately, the pain, the struggle, the suffering is what we need to find the right solutions, because it hasn't worked thus far. You know, this idea of, you know, we're going to put some safety nets under people so that everyone doesn't collapse. You know, the pandemic was a perfect example of that. Maybe we need to realize what they tell us that they want, the policies that they pursue that will be bad for us. Maybe we need it to happen so we can go, well, that was bad. Maybe we don't do that again. And maybe we want policies that are going to make lives better. This is not rocket science. And, you know, I look at just recently another Texas judge, shocker of shockers. But a Texas judge shot down the overtime rule that Biden put into place. Now, remember, you know, go back to this ruling. During the Obama years, they increased what it takes to be exempt from overtime. So you can be a salary employee. You know, back when Obama was president, before he raised it, it was $23,660. And your management, you're an employee, you can work 100 hours a week for $23,660 a year. So basically, you're working for much less than minimum wage. But hey, got the cute pin, manager, assistant manager. You're now on the other side of the aisle. Well, the Obama years, they said, we need to jack that up to about $47,000. You know, kind of in the line of where it would have been in the 70s that made you exempt because you were truly management. Now we give people at fast food restaurants, you know, cute titles, or you know, people in retail give them cute titles. Simply to avoid paying overtime. So they wanted to raise it up to $47,000. Well, immediately Trump came in. They filed lawsuits. They stopped it from going into the place. He jacked it up a little bit to $35,000. Well, Biden's come in and said, hey, we want to jack it up more so that, you know, one, we make it a true management wage. Sorry, if you're paying a manager $35,000 a year, there's a problem. Especially if they're working 100 hours a week. I fully expect, because this court has stopped it, another Trump judge, have stopped the increases from going into effect, and they've actually, you know, they're going to go retroactive and cut it off, which means we're making poverty wages great again. And you go, but Rick, you know, business needs this. You know, business shouldn't have to pay, you know, $47,000, $50,000 for an employee to be management. And you go, they don't have to pay that. They don't. Nobody said that they have to pay their employees $47,000 or more. Nobody is saying that. What we've said is if you're going to work them 100 hours a week and want to be exempt from overtime, you're going to have to pay them a higher wage. They can work someone 40 hours a week, pay a minimum wage. If they can find someone to do that, great. And then that hour after 40 hours, you got to pay them overtime. That's all. You can work them as many hours as you want. We don't have any maximum hour laws. There's no cutoff. It just says after 40, you got to pay time and a half. And understand, Project 2025, and I'm going to say Trump and his Department of Labor will, I think, move to get a 160-hour work month. You know, because we don't really want you to get overtime. And again, they'll say, well, we'll go to this 160-hour, work month, and we won't tax overtime, which, again, legislatively, I don't know how they dance around and get through. But let's say they got it through. You're just never going to get overtime. And that's the bait and switch of all of this. So my concern, and this is where I kind of want to leave this, I'll wrap this up. I come back to this sentiment. Which side are you on? When you look at the realities, which are you closer to? Are you closer to the CEO class or are you closer to the working poor? I remember my high school government teacher. I asked, how do you know what party you are? He was a guy who owned a lot of investment properties, had a lot of money. He was a guy who had lots of investments. He was a wealthy guy. He taught high school civics because he loved teaching. Not because he had to. And he said, look, at the end of the day, you guys have got to decide. Are you closer to being rich because Republicans are for the rich and big business? Or are you closer to poor? Because Democrats are for big social programs, safety net programs, investments in the working class. That, when I grew up, was the dynamic. And I argue it still is. So you've got to find where on that spectrum are you? And he said, look, you guys in the middle, you're going to pay for both. So ultimately decide, which are you closer to? You lose that job. Do you think you're going to end up in the world of Bezos and Musk, or are you going to end up in the world of people who can't put food on the table and are looking at living under a bridge? You can only decide that. We have been trained over the last several decades to not think that way. It's now about the other. It's now about identity issues, which, look, I've never been a huge fan of. And I've never promoted really on this program. I think I'm on the right side of every of those issues. I think life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, do your thing. Don't get it. Probably never going to get it. But you have the right to do what you want to do with your life. And I don't have to agree. And you don't have to care if I agree. And this is where Democrats, I think, lost their way a little bit. Or at least the activists. Because you're never getting purity out of Democrats. You're never, and you should stop demanding it. You're never getting purity out of the working class. We should be talking about how we create an economy that makes it so people can be who they are, that people can do what, follow their dreams, follow their aspirations, their hopes for their children, so that economically they can thrive and survive. That is the world. Whether you're on strike like the workers in Las Vegas or you're someone who's working as an assistant manager, these are the issues we should be fighting for. These are the things we should be talking about. These are the things where our media structure should be moving. But no, we can't do that because the wealth class understands. The Jay Gould quote, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. They get divide and conquer. They get how to pit us against each other. And it's our job as these things come up. Again, it's our job to point them out, to see them, and stand up for the people that it affects. Because ultimately, could be you. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.